Sikkim Sports presents the Sikkim Sportscast, a look at all things Baylor from recruiting to football, basketball, as well as news concerning the Big 12. Your hosts are publisher Kevin Lundquist and managing editor Jake Shaw. Our MC is Stephen Cook. Now it's time to talk Baylor, and here's Stephen Cook.
Welcome to the Sikkim Sportscast. I'm Steve Cook, here with publisher Kevin Lundquist.
Always a pleasure, Stephen. Good to be with you.
And managing editor Jake Shaw.
Hey, guys.
All right, let's start out. Baylor opened McLean Stadium, and there were recruits there. Kevin, you talked to them. What'd they say?
It was an amazing day for Baylor's recruiting efforts, if you will. Probably about 30, 35 kids were there. You had some big names that were there. Malik Jefferson, the 2015 linebacker from Mesquite Poteet, was there. Several members of the 2015 class were already there, namely Clay Johnston, the linebacker out of Abilene Wiley, Drew Galitz, the latest recruit, the punter kicker out of Rowlett. Blake Lynch was there. Jamichael Hasty was there. From the 2016 commitment class, you had Zach Smith there from Grandview. You had Trendavian Dixon, the wide receiver from Navasota, that was there. And then some of these kids that were there that Baylor is still pursuing, you had the likes of Ronald Jones II, the running back who's committed to Oklahoma State. He's from McKinney North. He was there. There had been some hope that Soso Jamabo, the Plano West 2015 linebacker, was going to be there. He was not able to make it because he had an early practice on Monday morning because of the Labor Day holiday, so they wanted to get that practice in. A couple of other kids like Derek King, Manville athlete 2016, was there, as well as C.J. Morgan, a defensive back from Bossier City Parkway. He actually went to Baylor's camp in Marshall over in June. Oh, and I don't want to leave out Devin DuVernay, the wide receiver of the 2016 recruit out of Sachse, who was also there. So that's just kind of a thumbnail sketch of some of the top kids that were there. All the kids very, very complimentary of Baylor's game presentation. You know, obviously a lot of them talked about the recruiting room itself. You know, they got a great spread. From what I understand, they got like a chicken fried steak, mashed potatoes, some sort of a wrap. They had the Xbox games ready to go. I don't think all of them played them, because as soon as they got done eating, they went to go watch the pregame, you know, preparations and that sort of thing. But a very successful night as far as Baylor's recruiting front was concerned, opening up that stadium in front of a number of recruits on a very historic day for Baylor.
Yeah, Kevin, you mentioned Ronald Jones being there. That's pretty huge, because from what we've learned, Baylor was the runner-up in his decision to Oklahoma State, but apparently he still has enough interest to get down to the game, and it doesn't sound like it was just kind of a visit to do something just because he had nothing to do on a Sunday night, but definitely right. Wanted to get down there and see. You know, it makes sense, because every kid who was there, and every Baylor fan for that matter, had never experienced what we experienced Sunday night, and that's the right. McLean Stadium and everything, all the pageantry around it. So, look, you know, if he wants to look at Baylor, he's got to look at Baylor what it is now and what it and not what it was before when they were recruiting him and, you know, things were at Floyd Casey Stadium. So right. that was a really big win by the staff to get him there. And moving on, another guy who was there, Tony Nicholson. He's right. An athlete from South Grand Prairie. He got an offer from Baylor, I think, in February. He was very high on Baylor. He told me his mom wanted to say him to stay close to home. So what does he do? 4 or 5 months later, he commits to Arizona State. you know, that kind of took me by surprise when he did it, because I talked to him multiple times, both on the phone, you know, through Twitter.
Right.
You know, it surprised me. So he visits Baylor on Sunday. He goes to the game, and 3 days later, he's decommitting from Arizona State. So you have to think going down to Waco, you know, played a part in his decision to reopen his recruitment. I know both of us have talked to him, and Baylor's definitely going to be a player, but it seems right now he doesn't really want to talk to the media. He kind of wants to go about this a little more quietly.
And as we put on our site about Tony, is the fact that he is trying to get his 5 official visits lined up. He has said that Baylor will get one of those official visits, so that's a pretty good sign. And I know that you know, when I asked him point blank about, well, are they looking at you as a corner or as an athlete? He goes, I really don't know. He goes, probably athlete right now. And again, that's all kind of as much as I could do to kind of coax something out of him. But I think with Tony's athleticism, Jake, is that I think that he's the kind of guy, he kind of fits the mold in so many different guys that Baylor has recruited like him, because they can put him anywhere. They can put him on offense or defense, and he's kind of a shorter version, if you will, of Davion Hall, who could have played anywhere. And the same thing like Blake Lynch with this 2015 class, who could be – they haven't defined his position yet. He could go wide receiver or safety once he gets on campus.
You know, with all the injuries to the receiving core, maybe right now they take him as a receiver.
Yeah, they might have to.
Hopefully by the time if he does come to Baylor, maybe they're healed by then. But who knows? And that's for another segment. I don't want to jump ahead. One more guy I want to talk about is Dia Meeson, an unusual name. He's a guy out of Philadelphia who now plays at a junior college in California. I think last week we briefly talked about how he was taking his official visit to Baylor this Sunday. He did indeed go. I have been touch and go with him, texting. Still haven't been able to talk to him on the phone. But, I'm kind of slightly getting the perception that one side has cooled on the other, or maybe both have cooled on each other. That's a little bit of speculation on my part, just based on our conversation. But something I think that when Baylor offered him, they didn't have Ishmael Wilson on campus. He's the transfer from Texas A&M, offensive guard, maybe tackle. They also didn't have Rami Hamad, the one-time Baylor commitment, Oklahoma State commitment, eventually a Texas signee who redshirted a year and then, as we all know, has recently transferred to Baylor. So you have those two, and then you also have Maurice Porter, the Navarro offensive lineman who's committed to this 2015 class. That's three guys that in 2015 are going to be ready to play. They're not like high school linemen where they need some time. All three of them are going to be ready to play next year. Mm-hmm. And so I'm starting to wonder if Baylor even needs a guy like Meeson, especially considering this is going to be a small class. Do you want to use a scholarship on a lineman who might not play? Mm-hmm. Probably not. So I don't want to, shut the book on this with him, because I still need to talk to him, but I'm starting to think that Baylor maybe is rethinking things just because of the additions of Ishmael Wilson and Rami Hamad. That's two major players coming in that they didn't have when they were recruiting Meeson in the first place.
I don't think you're wrong, and for the reasons you just pointed out, and the fact that, remember, Hamad will be ready in 2015. Wilson got his hardship waiver approved by the NCAA, so he's technically ready to go and can play right away right now, although it doesn't seem likely unless some injuries were to pop up. And then again, with Mo Porter, he's going to come in for the spring semester in January, so he'll have 2 years to go, and he'll be ready to go. So you look at those three guys, they're going to already have three guys that are going to be ready to go for the 2015 class. And if you look at the Baylor 2-deep right now, you've got a couple seniors on that group, and I don't think that they want, given where this program is right now, I don't think that they're in a position where they can say, we can develop these guys, work with them, and redshirt them, and all that good stuff. We're going to find some guys that are going to be immediately ready to play at the Division I level, because we feel like we're in a pretty good spot with the program to compete at a high level. And if we do take an offensive lineman in future years, we can kind of hide him in a couple of years and still have these frontline guys ahead of him. That's the way I read this.
Yeah. I there's really only one senior starting, Troy Baker.
Right.
So Drango, if he has an outstanding year, he's eligible for the draft. I don't see that happening again unless he's just downright dominant. So you're going to have four starters back in 2015, and that's why you bring in a guy like Meeson, is to play right away. But the more and more I think about it, the less and less I think he ends up at Baylor. He has some other good offers, so maybe Baylor cools on him. Well, maybe the next podcast we'll talk about it. Hopefully by then he's called me back. But
if he hasn't called you back by then we know something's up. So.
Yeah, most definitely. But I'm curious to see what he had to say, just from the standpoint of here's a total outsider. Again, I mentioned he's from the East Coast, and now he's playing in California. He has no perception of Baylor before what Sunday night was. So it'd be a good guy to talk to, just to see what his take was on everything. If you know, if it just blew him away, if it's, has he seen it before, you know, so hopefully very soon I will talk to him, and, you know, maybe the next podcast we'll go over that, but I think that kind of really sums it up with recruiting, just a huge weekend. I think the only maybe negative was there wasn't a commitment. I think maybe people would have wanted one, not maybe, people definitely would have wanted one. It didn't happen, but this right. kind of weekend probably lays the groundwork for a future commitment for sure.
Yeah, and just a couple things. They'll have some visitors for the Northwestern State game this Saturday. I know of one that's at least looking at it is the South Lake Carroll defensive back, our safety, Obi Evo. He's been looking at it. I know I think Isaiah Chambers down in Houston, he might be looking at coming up for this one as well. So that would be a good way to get him up there. And then as far as the basketball thing, just to quickly skim over that, sounded like it was a really positive visit for DJ Hogg from the Texas Titans. He came in along with King McClure, and so, you know, and that was King's official visit because obviously he committed to Baylor back in April. So, but that sounds like it went really, really well as far as DJ is concerned. It does sound like, just from people that I've talked to, that DJ is going to still take his official visits, although there's strong speculation that he's going to follow Tyler Davis to Texas A&M since Tyler committed there. They also got a game day unofficial visit from their Texas Titans teammate, Marcus Bolden, the big man out of DeSoto, who's, I think, number 31 in the Rivals 150 for 2016. So to get him down there was a big thing. And then this weekend, Adamon Gilder, the Dallas Madison guard, has got his visit set up, and he's coming to Waco this weekend. So it's going to be one of those things where they're – this is when you take advantage of the stadium, take advantage of the official visits, getting kids on campus, and, of course, we'll see. I still think Baylor has a lot of work to do with them as far as getting Admon Gilder, but we'll just kind of have to wait and see what happens. And, of course, in the Blitz for Friday, we'll have as much of a list as we can for visitors coming in for both basketball and football.
Yeah, I hate to say it, but, I mean, it's smart by Scott Drew to get him here for football weekends because the basketball environment just cannot match the football one, so... you know, maybe you put your best foot forward and show these basketball kids what Baylor, you know, what can be and perhaps not what it isn't. Because, you know, you get them for a non-conference basketball game on a Tuesday night or something like that, right. Or a non-conference game on the weekend, frankly, it's just not quite nearly as impressive as what they'll see at McLean Stadium. So,
exactly.
Pretty good timing to have these basketball kids come for football weekends.
Yeah. Well, remember, too, they had Tyus Jones and Okafor, Jahlil Okafor, come in together last year at one of their home football games at Floyd Casey. So they've all – so they're, and, of course, this is – remember, you've got the early signing period in November, so this is the time when all these kids are going to be scrambling – we're going to be cramming in these official visits, too. But, again, you're absolutely right. Get them in on football weekends when the school – when there's a fever pitch around the campus – in the community so they can kind of soak it all in. That's the best way to do it.
Yep.
Okay, so if we're looking at the 2015 football recruiting class, we think you're going to have 15 positions open, and they've got 12 right now?
Yes, sir.
Okay. For the next ones that they do, are they going to be looking for positions, or are they going to be looking for the best personnel?
You know, if we're talking 15, I know, Jake, you can put your spin on this. I've just kind of looked at this and said as far as these last three, four, whatever spots it is, that's such a moving target with this program. But let's just say for the sake of discussion, there's four. I really think that they're going to be looking at these guys for the best player available, whether that's going to be an athlete, whether that's going to be a defensive end or something like that. They're not going to take a defensive tackle unless everything lines up for them to get Darian Daniels from Dallas Bishop Dunn. You're probably right. You touched on the fact that they're probably not going to take an offensive lineman because of everything that else has transpired. So I'm kind of the opinion here that best player available, if it's a running back, if that's Ronald Jones, if that's Corey Dauphin, which is kind of out there, if it's Soso Jumabo, you know, guys like that. And, of course, knowing Art Briles, Jake, and Steven, you never want to discount the where-did-he-come-from type of player
that shows
up on January 31st that commits out of nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, I look at this class before anything went down as far as commitments, and the areas that stuck out to me were linebacker and defensive back. Now, linebacker, you've got Breckenhager and Clay Johnson committed. There's two guys there, and they're both different kind of players, so I think you kind of address middle and outside linebacker with those. Now, as far as defensive back goes, you've got a couple of cornerbacks, Jordan Tolbert and Jameson Houston, that addresses that area. You've got two safeties, really one, and a maybe with Blake Lynch can be looked at as a safety, but also Montrell Wilson. So you've got that covered. We've talked about offensive line. They're in great shape there. You really wanted a quarterback. You have Chad President there. One running back, maybe two. You've got Jermichael Hasty, a receiver with Devontae Strickland. I think they've covered all their bases in this class. They don't have many openings, which means there aren't really that many needs. I think, Steven, I think they lean more toward, you know, best player available, and, you know, perhaps they put a lot more emphasis on a guy like Malik Jefferson. Because, look, if you don't get him, you really have nothing to lose with a guy like that. Everybody else is after him, but, yeah, I think it's, yeah, it's like a draft. It's best player available, and I think they've got all their needs covered, and they're in really good shape. I think they can, frankly, sign 12 guys and be okay, just because, really, that's more guys than you have scholarships available next year. So, you know, obviously there will be attrition, but they don't really need anybody else in this class. Obviously, as a fan, you want to see a few more just because you love the thrill of a commitment. But I think they're in pretty good shape right now. It's not going to rank in the top 25 because it's so few on numbers, but look, you've addressed your needs and you have some outstanding players in the class. I think they're pretty fine right now and will be happy with whoever else they get.
Yeah, and we're the dimwits who completely forgot about, you know, the fact that, you know, last week when Galitz committed, and we found, oh, that's right, Spencer Roth is a senior. Well, who's going to be punting next year? And that completely, I think that caught everybody off guard. Well, you know,
well, you know, Kevin, it didn't quite, because remember, they had offered a kid out of Florida, Tommy Townsend.
Oh, that's right.
It was a punter, and we talked to him, and he seemed really high on Baylor, and then, you know, a few weeks later, he committed to Tennessee. So, you know, it was on our radar that they wanted a punter. Once Townsend committed somewhere else, I kind of thought maybe they were going to just try the walk-on route, but they offered Galitz, and, you know, he switched from Miami. So, now, I guess if you had one other hole, it would be punter, and they filled that too as well. So, yeah, I don't see them having to do a ton more work with this 2015 class.
Just to make sure that everyone is good to go, and that the relationships are solidified, and of course, you know, just hoping that and just on a final note with Jermichael Hasty, with his injury with what appears to be his back, that you know, he has shared with us that it's not a disc issue. It's something that's going to be reevaluated later on during the course of Longview's season. I would suspect that in his case, that even if he gets a favorable reexamination, if you're John King and if you're Jermichael and everyone that's involved, regardless of how Longview's season is going, it would be really a tough thing to really want to go out there and play him unless everything was right and he was healthy enough to do it. Because, you know, with backs, I mean, we saw it with Spencer Drangle of a disc variety, that's just something you've really got to watch. And given the fact that Jermichael has got a pretty good looking future ahead of him coming over to Waco, that you got to look big picture. And I'm not insinuating that Longview shouldn't do it, but I'm just saying that that's part of the evaluation of if he gets a favorable review of what they would do with that. So.
Okay.
Sorry, Stephen. I think that cell phone ringing on Kevin's part means it's time to move on to the next segment, right?
That's what I get for not having the mute button on.
Okay. I agree with you guys. What I'm reading out of, you know, every coach has their own catchphrases, and one of our Bryles catchphrases is, we want the best 11 athletes on the field. We think if we do that we're in good shape. So I agree with y'all. They got positions addressed. They're looking for the best athletes they can find, because if you get an athlete, he can play somewhere. All right, when we come back, we are going to go over SMU tailgating and a growing list of injuries.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SickhamSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
And we're back, and we were at the stadium this last weekend for the opening. First weekend at the new on-campus McLean Stadium, and Jake Shaw did extensive research into tailgating, and Jake's going to give us an update on what was going on there.
You're exactly right, Stephen. It was extensive. I did have some supplements with me at the tailgating that actually enhanced the experience, and you know, that's something that 7 or 8 years ago Baylor really didn't have, were those enhancements. You know, the tailgating scene at Baylor, it was pretty non-existent up until, you know, maybe second or third years of Art Briles, and now it's just totally caught fire. And I got there about 1 o'clock on Sunday, about 5.5 hours before game time, and you know, I thought I'd be one of, you know, not the first arriving, but you know, I thought early on, but the scene was packed by 1 o'clock, just completely packed. And, you know, for people who know the Baylor campus, know the layout, my parking spot was at the Farrell Center, and there are RVs all over the Farrell Center, people tailgating, which is, I mean, that's a pretty fair distance away from the stadium. And I know that for a fact because I walked from the Farrell Center to the stadium towing a cooler, and it took me about 25 minutes. And you do that in about 95-degree weather, and you work off some of the calories that you're getting from other areas of that day. So, you know, from the walk from the Farrell Center all the way to McLean Stadium, no matter where you looked, there were people tailgating. Just incredible electricity and excitement and anticipation. I'm starting to sound like Art Briles, but it's true. I mean, all those great adjectives that describe it. You know, so I got to my spot. I'm right on the river. I'm near the new track stadium, and I happened to climb up on a friend's on his trailer. He has a platform, and so I could get an overhead view of all the tailgating, and it just really blew me away. I think Baylor needs to be complimented on the setup for the tailgating. They really did it right. There are multiple areas, and all the areas are really just packed with people. Little things. Like the landscaping, were already in place, and you know, sometimes little details like that come later in the construction. But everything was just perfect. You know, the bear walk with bricks where people could, you know, buy a brick and customize it. You know, it just looked great. You know, Baylor's had good tailgating the last few years, but this was just a totally new experience. And Baylor did an outstanding job. And when they built the stadium, they definitely had the fan in mind as well, and they wanted to ensure that the pregame atmosphere outside the stadium was just as nice as the actual game experience inside. And Stephen, I know you probably have some observations too as well.
Yeah, the first thing that I picked up on was there were quite a few boats out there, and people were having fun. I don't think a lot of them came into the game, but there was somebody out there with boomboxes blasting the Baylor theme song out there. A lot of people were having a really great time. It's something that we've heard Baylor say before, that they don't want to say they have to educate the fans, but they were... It's a different experience for Baylor that used to be you went to the game, you know, and like if you lived in Waco, you might leave an hour before the game starts, and you're parked and you're in the stadium, and you watch a game and then you leave. Well, this started, I got there about 1:30, and there were already 8,000 or so people there. The traffic flowed really well. The only kind of sticking point is that the bridge, the walking bridge with the bear walk and the between the track and the stadium that goes over the lagoon, that thing got packed. I was going to come over and take some photos of the tailgating scene, and I took a look at that walking bridge, and I said, and this was after the RG3 statue, I said, if I go over that walking bridge, I might not make it back in time for the game start, you know, and that was a couple of hours, so that was probably the only sticking point that I saw. Getting into the stadium, they got a lot of access points.
Yeah.
And people really got in quickly. Behind the stands, and this was another thing that I think was kind of nice, particularly on this day, was that there were a lot of places that even regular fans, people that aren't press, people that aren't big shots, can go and get air conditioning. And that was particularly big yesterday because I talked to some of my friends from East Texas, and they said that they did have to transport quite a few people that got a little overheated, particularly some of the older fans that had come out because, you know, it was in the 90s and pretty humid about 3 o'clock. So that I found was interesting. When we got into the stadium, the way that it's tiered, it is loud, but again, it's a thing where I think the Baylor fans are going to have to, you know, they're going to have to kind of educate themselves on the game, because I kind of felt some energy go out of the crowd a little bit early, and I think maybe that they were kind of played out, because I don't think most of the fans just aren't used to getting there that early for a game. So I think they were kind of like ready for the day to be over before the game was over.
Yeah, I think also part of that was, and I think this is a good transition to actually talking about the game and not just the atmosphere, but, you know, the offense had its troubles. You know, Petty overthrew guys. He had more overthrows in that game than he did in the first half of last year, and that's not an exaggeration. Whereas SMU was just, I don't want to say they're inept, because I've gone back and watched the game again. They had no chance to do anything because of their offensive line just getting whipped by Baylor's defensive line. So, you know, I think you're right, Stephen. I did notice it. I especially noticed it when Petty started grimacing and showing, you know, that his back was hurt. That the crowd did kind of tone it down a little. So, but I think you're right. The heat probably had something to do with that too. But the noise level did decrease after, say, the first 10 minutes of the game.
Yeah, I think, and, you know, it tells you how much the Baylor program has changed, that, you know, 5 years ago, I'm photographing Baylor, we're thrilled about a victory over Sam Houston State. You know, I mean, you talk to Baylor fans, they're, you know, hey, we beat anybody. The Baylor fans are saying, we beat anybody 5 years ago, and they're thrilled. Today, Baylor beats SMU by 45 points. You know, the Bears didn't quite look as good as they usually do. Think about how fast people get spoiled.
Well, it's true. They you know, the 45 points, like I said, Petty probably left 28 points off in the field just by overthrows. And that's not, again, not an exaggeration. You know, I guess let's go ahead and talk about that offense. I guess, Kevin, what's your first impressions of, you know, the Baylor offense of 2014?
Well, not sharp to start off with, and let's face it, too. Remember, two of Baylor's touchdowns came where they accumulated only 10 yards. They picked up a fumble or recovered a fumble at the SMU 6 and scored a couple plays later, and then they had a Levi Norwood punt return that went down to the SMU 4, so they were able to get a touchdown out of that, which is great. I mean, you want to take advantage of those opportunities and drive the, and if you're given, you know, point blank range to score, you better take advantage of it, not settle for field goals or what have you. So they did what they had to do there. I never discouraged that. But as a whole, I think we can all agree that one, the passing game is not very good right now in comparison to past Baylor standards. The deep ball that Bryce has thrown, his back injury notwithstanding, you could even go back to last year, toward the end of last year, where things just don't look right with that deep ball. I don't know if that's a case where Tevin Reese was so fast last year that regardless of where Bryce put it up, that Tevin was just going to have enough speed to go under it and get it. But I think it's something that that they're going to have to really look at as far as, you know, what do we want to do with the deep ball here if this thing's going to be off? Now, we're probably not going to really realize that or really get a fair sense of where that thing's going to go if Bryce doesn't play on Saturday against Northwestern State, which everything points to that he won't.
Yeah.
And secondly, if he plays to a limited extent at Buffalo on Friday the 12th, and then you're going to get an off week, and then they're going to go to Ames. So I, to be honest with you, I just don't know what we're going to see with the passing game until we really get an idea when they go to Ames in a couple of weeks, Jake.
Yeah, you know, something, I went back and watched the game again, and I think Petty was just rushing these passes. And it's something I talked about last week. Would adrenaline be a problem with these guys? Would too much energy be a problem? You know, these guys are wide open. He was throwing it probably too early. And instead of waiting for the guy to actually get downfield a little, mm-hmm. and every time he threw it, he had plenty of time. It wasn't a matter of he had to throw it because of pressure. I mean, still, you'd like to see him connect with him, but I think his timing was off with the receivers, and it was definitely off. His first incompletion of the game, or his first, I guess, say, overthrow, it was a route by Antoine Goodley before he left. Goodley left with his injury. Goodley had a, you know, he made a read on the safety that was covering him. It looked like the safety was inside, so he cut the route upfield, basically a fly route. And Petty had the opposite read and threw to Goodley like he was going to run a slant, a deep slant. And, you know, they weren't on the same page. That's a little bit troubling that your senior receiver and your senior quarterback didn't have the same read. But other than that, I think that was really the only instance of that in that game. Other than that, yeah, his deep ball was off. I think it was a timing thing because he threw at least two overthrows before I really think he injured his back. So right. I don't think the overthrows were because of his back. I think it's just his timing was off.
I
think that can be fixed, Kevin. I really think that can be fixed.
I do too, Jake. But it's just something that you can kind of overlook it for these next two games. But again, if this pattern continues in Ames, which is going to be the one where you're going to really find out where this thing is going, in my judgment, even though Iowa State is what it is right now, I just think that because you're going against probably your best competitor to that point.
Yeah.
And you want to see where they really are in terms of the timing standpoint, things of that nature, connection, communication, that sort of thing. I just think that they've got to make sure that they are really working in the right, that the patience is there. You know, I even made the comment after the game that I even thought that Bryce's touch balls were just okay. They weren't bad, they weren't horrible, but they weren't great either. Even the touchdown pass that they threw to Javon Armstead in the end zone, there's really not a lot you can do with that ball because you kind of have to shot put it up because how quick the drop is and how Trevon's coming over the middle of the end zone to pick that thing off. But just something just was not right there. And it could have been an adrenaline thing, the injury thing, whatever the case may be. And maybe we're overanalyzing it. But I do think that they know that they've got to get this thing looking right because they know it's not looking right at all.
There's no doubt about it. Whatever the cause, he did not look good. He looked okay. Mm-hmm. And maybe that's our segue to the defense.
Well, let me go ahead and throw in a thing. It's something that I've thought about Petty for a long time, and I first started thinking about it last year after Texas Tech. He, like, throws for three touchdowns, runs for a touchdown, no interceptions, rushing. He's a Big 12 Player of the Week, and he comes out in the interview and starts and goes, I've got to play better. And I think that, you know, once he gets his back healthy, I think that the thing for Bryce Petty is that he needs to I think he puts so much pressure on himself.
Mm-hmm.
And it's part of what you have to have kind of a thing that where, thank you that he's not Johnny Manziel. But, you know, Manziel, the pressure never got to Manziel. Else he did. He was out there, he was throwing it, and he didn't care what anybody thought. And Petty is just tries so hard to be so perfect that I think the answer for Petty might be to relax a little bit more rather than pressing a little bit harder.
Yeah, I agree, and that's what I think he was. That's what, you know, plays to my point of him throwing these passes early. It just looked like he was rushing things, and rather than just being calm. And I swear, if he throws the same pass on all those overthrows, half a second later, every one of them is a touchdown. His timing was off, and you're right, Stephen. He might have just been pressing a little, and perhaps needs to calm down a little and channel his inner Johnny Football. Not too much of it, though. We don't want him to channel too much of that.
No. We want to channel it. We want to cut it off at the swan.
Yeah.
As far as the running game is concerned, you know, I thought it was pretty decent. I mean, Shaq Linwood, I thought, was fine. Obviously, the fumble in the end zone in the second half was not good. You can't do that. I mean, even though that game was decided at the time of this fumble, you can't do that in Austin in a 17-17 game in the middle of the third quarter or something like that. I'm just throwing that out there for the sake of discussion. Yeah, you know, then, of course, Devin Chafin. And Devin Chafin, not looking good. It looks like he's banged up again because it looks like even though he's got the groin thing behind him, now it's been disclosed he's got a high ankle sprain. So he's not even probably going to play against Northwestern State. And I think you could see it from the stands or in the box or on the field level, Stephen. I know where I could see it. It's just he just could not cut on that thing. And so, but on the flip side, I thought Johnny Jefferson was pretty decent getting out of the box in his first game. And I don't want to bring the whole wide receiver thing down because it was fun to see KD Cannon catch his first pass in college, a 46-yard touchdown pass. That was a good-looking deep ball there, and it's fun to see him. And then Davion Hall leads the team in receiving yards with 86, has 7 receptions. I'm sure it was kind of frustrating. What, his first 2 receptions were called back because of penalties.
Yeah.
But I thought Davion looked fine. And of course, you know, a lot of Davion's numbers came in the second half when the game was already decided anyway. But at the same time, just getting those two on the field was really kind of fun because you got a glimpse of the future in the present day. And I think it's going to be really kind of fun to see those two kind of interact with each other. I can tell you this. When I saw those two lined up next to each other at a formation at the Meet the Bears practice, I'm like, this could be really, really interesting in 2014, 15, 16, and 17.
Yeah, I agree. I was truly blown away by not Cannon. I mean, he played great. I thought Hall, because he was a guy that everybody wanted to play safety at Baylor because, you know, you want some stud athletes on defense because the defense has needed help. So people were disappointed this guy's playing receiver. Nobody's going to be disappointed anymore. He had a great game. I think one of his best plays of the night was one that he was rolled out of bounds when he caught it, but it was just a go route down the sideline, and it was underthrown, and he stopped, you know, came back and made the catch. It just showed me that he does have the position down. It's not a guy who doesn't know much about receiver and wanting to play it. He looks like a natural receiver. And, I think if you – one more guy we got to mention, Jay Lee. I thought he had an outstanding game. He's a guy that we've been waiting on to do something. He showed a little flash at the end of 2013, but I went back and watched the game, and Baylor leaned on him heavily in the first half when the game was still undecided. They really made him the priority with Antoine Goodley not being available, and he delivered, and he was very physical, something he hadn't been in any of his time at Baylor before. So, I think he kind of showed that he can be a number one receiver when Goodley is out, and that's huge for Baylor. My last point about receivers.
Defense.
Well, before we move to the defense, Stephen, I just want to say, you know, we're really concerned about the injuries, a receiver, but, you know, not many teams would turn down a starting trio of Jay Lee, Davion Hall, and KD Cannon, you know, when you think about it. I know they're inexperienced, but those are three just outstanding talents. And I think Baylor has been a little spoiled, the fans especially. You know, there's that trio maybe doesn't get as excited because Goodley's hurt. Levi Norwood, he could be thrown in there too. Corey Coleman not playing. But those three guys, they could start for 90% of the college football teams in the country. So long as there's not a couple more injuries, the receiving core is going to be okay. until we get to conference season. But Steven, yeah, let's talk about the defense.
Yeah, and oh, by the way, Lynx Hawthorne made a few catches, so there were some guys cruising. Jay Lee, yeah, like you said, he stepped up and he looked like the upperclassman receiver that they really needed him to be that time. When we looked at the defense, down on the field, when you watched Baylor's defensive line going against SMU's offensive line, I'm pretty sure Jim Jones went to the police to show them where Baylor touched him after that game. It was just, oh dear, did I violate podcast standards there?
No. I'm laughing.
Okay. Yeah, Kevin's I'm just staring at me.
I'm laughing. No, it was a violation. It was a violation for sure. It was
about as boy men to boys as an I don't know what the right way to say this is, but it was such an overmatched thing. I've never seen a college football game where when you went matchup to matchup, position against position, that one group just completely owned the other group. I mean, you could say when that group really won it over the other group, but this was no doubt after the first SMU series, and you could already tell after the first series, like, I know where this thing is going, and I don't know if, you know, and SMU tried three different quarterbacks in that game. They went with Neil Burcham, Matt Davis, and Colney Castle in the second half when that thing was out of hand anyway. And yeah, you could probably say that those quarterbacks never had a chance. I would say to you that Bertram's not going to be a very good quarterback anyway throughout his college career. That's another discussion for somebody else. But I'll say this. I don't know. I mean, that's as good. I mean, as much as we've talked about the defensive line being arguably the best position on this team, with all due respect to the wide receivers, you got a glimpse of that on Sunday night on how good this group can be. And you probably won't see it like this for the balance of the season because they're going to face better offensive lines. But I think that just shows you the raw athleticism that's out there with this front, with the depth in there. Because it's a legitimate two deep, guys. And they can rotate guys in there at the tackles and the ends, and they won't miss a beat because they're that gifted and they're that talented.
Yeah, I really can't agree with you more, and really just can only add on maybe a few words. But Sean Oakman was just
crazy good.
He was destructive. Jamal Palmer is going to get overshadowed all season long because of Oakman, but he was really good too. Andrew mm-hmm. Billings was dominant. I thought Bo Blackshear, again, I mean, when he's the fourth starter on that line, he's going to get overshadowed by Oakman, Palmer, and Billings, but he had a good game. I went back again. I've said it 15 times on this podcast. Walk back and watch the game, and I'll be honest, I truly expected the defense to not look as good watching the replay as they did in person, because I thought, you know, maybe SMU just wasn't good, or I don't know, maybe just the excitement of the game, you kind of they didn't look as good on tape as they did in person. It's the opposite. They looked better when I watched them, because not only is the defensive line just wreaking havoc, this is the fastest I've ever seen Baylor break the ball, and it's the fastest I've ever seen them diagnose plays. SMU runs a lot of screen plays, both to the running backs and the receivers, and Baylor's going to see a lot of that this year. There are multiple times where the linebackers immediately read it. I saw Sean Oakman and Jamal Palmer several times. They're rushing the passer, quickly realize it's a screen pass, and then they cut out in the flats to cover a running back or a receiver.
Right.
And then the secondary was a big question mark. It's a little too early to get a read on them just because they weren't tested much.
They had the night off.
they did. You know, you say that, Kevin, but SMU in the first half, I think they threw it downfield four or five times. They didn't have a single completion on those. Right. You know, partly because there was pressure and the quarterback was being rushed, but the coverage was excellent each time.
Right.
I think Damian Howard, he really showed me a lot on Sunday night. I think he's a guy that can be an all-conference type of player. You know, maybe not this year, but he was step for step, if not ahead of every receiver. And something I said on the Craig Smoke show on ESPN 1660 today is that, man, so many times Baylor cornerbacks are there for the play, yet when the ball comes down, they're looking at the receiver, and the receiver makes the catch, and you're screaming, "Turn your head!" I mean, I can't tell you how many times I've heard that at Baylor, "Turn your head." Xavien Howard turned his head every single time he was tested deep, and frankly, if the passes were accurate, he might have had 3 interceptions on Sunday. He was just there to make a play every time.
I say that tongue-in-cheek, but he was, yeah, you're right, Xavien was really, really good on Sunday night. I think he was probably, to me, he was kind of the unsung heroes of that defensive front, just because, you know, it's so easy to be induced by what you see from the defensive line owning the offensive line, but you're right, I thought Xavien was really, really good. You know, and it might be a case where, dare we say, for this year, that if the offense is kind of like this the entire season, where it's good but nothing exceptional or whatever, that defensive unit can that defensive unit, guys, is good enough to win the Big 12 championship. It's good enough to put them in a chance to stay in the national championship conversation. And as we've said all along in past podcasts, that as long as this defensive line continues to do its thing in September, by the time they hit Texas on October 4th, and get the linebackers and the secondary just the seasoning to get themselves up to speed and kind of feeling comfortable and that sort of thing, to, you know, their cornerbacks are going to get beat. It happens. That's part of the game. Yep. But if they just get out there and they feel experienced and they feel comfortable with what they're doing and assignments, mechanics, coachable things or whatever, that this is a group that can absolutely have a chance to have something to say about the national championship picture, much less the Big 12 championship picture, on that first week in December and whatever happens after that. I really think that it would absolutely take, and Baylor would have to absolutely, in my opinion, self-destruct in order for the season to go in a far different direction than what we think it's going to be.
Well, you know, Kevin, either self-destruct or injuries just continue to plague this team, and I think it's probably time to maybe close out this segment and talk about those injuries. You know, you touched on Bryce Petty, probably not going to play Saturday. From what I've been told by a source, a good one, that it is seemingly unlikely that he will play. But the bright side, if you missed it on SickhamSports.com this week, I did speak with a spine specialist, a doctor in Dallas who is he consults with the Dallas Mavericks and the FC Dallas. And he basically said Bryce Petty's injury, which is cracks in his transverse process, something we all knew about beforehand, of course.
Right.
Basically said it's a very minor injury. There's no pain in the crack of the bone. It's just pain in the muscle from – it's basically like a big bruise, really, and a very painful one, and something that Petty's going to have healed, but it's not something that's going to be nagging him all season. Really, if you're going to have a cracked anything – you want it to be the crack transverse process. So I think Baylor dodged a bullet there. The doctor I talked to said he'd have no trouble clearing a player this week, even if it took an injection of a painkiller on his back. So that's really great news on Bryce Petty, although we all agree, don't play him Saturday. No need to against Northwestern State. And I know, Kevin, you have more injury on guys like Devin Chapin and Antoine Goodley.
Right, with Goodley, it's, you know, he re-aggravated his quad. That was something that happened in the early part of camp. He re-aggravated it. It doesn't sound like he's going to go Saturday night against Northwestern State. We talked about Devin Chafin. Sounds like the groin is okay, but he suffered a high ankle sprain during the SMU game. Doesn't sound like he's going to go. Some noted optimism for Corey Coleman's hamstring, that there has been some improvement, but again, don't look for him to play either. As we've talked about with Corey, if he wasn't going to play against SMU, why would you want to put him in there for these first 3 games anyway? So that seems to be running the same way. Give him a full month to prepare for Iowa State. We talked about Seth Russell. You know, it had been mentioned, and looked like he did mention to us, I think he mentioned to Steven, that he kind of got his right hand whacked, but it looks like he's going to be okay. And evidence that he should be good to go is that he's been taking first team reps all week. So if everything, unless there's just some dramatic switch here in the next 2-3 days before Saturday night's kickoff, Seth Russell is going to be your starting quarterback for Baylor against Northwestern State. So that's kind of a look at the injuries. And defensively, you know, and again, Chris Sanders with the hamstring issue, sells something to kind of watch there as well.
Yeah, I mean, really, the only negative of Seth Russell starting Saturday is that it hurts Bryce Petty's Heisman campaign, but he'd be the first to tell you, and the team would too. They don't really care. They want to win the Big 12 title and get to the Final Four, and if it means him sitting out Saturday, so be it.
Right.
Finally, I guess I think, Stephen, maybe we should talk about Baylor's next game, huh?
Yeah, Northwestern State, you know, I've been trying to find something out on him. I found a little blurb on the Baylor website. I couldn't find any the only stories I found about the Northwestern State football team were on Wikipedia. I don't know who's covering these guys. About the only thing I can tell you that I can tell you about Northwestern State is that I kind of like their mascot because their mascot looks like a Guy Fawkes mask. Jake, you talked. You were able to break one of their reporters away from his busy schedule. Can you tell me about Northwestern State?
Well, yes, I did. I did speak with a reporter at the Natchitoches Times. That's a tongue twister.
Natchitoches.
Natchitoches.
Oh,
Natchitoches.
I thought it was Natchitoches. Okay.
No. Oh, it could be, Kevin. I don't know. Fortunately, okay. I didn't have to say the name to him, and he didn't have to correct me. But basically, he says, you know, he's honest. He said Baylor's going to slaughter Northwestern State. He said he thinks Northwestern State can maybe put up 7 to 10 points late in the game, but he doesn't expect it to. No, he's being honest, and you know, last week when we spoke to the SMU writer, he was pretty honest too. He expected Baylor to win big, and that happened.
Right.
Honest too. You know, I think it's just the main thing here. You want to try to get out healthy, obviously, and two, you just want to be focused because you don't want to get in the habit of showing up to games without your full concentration. Because you know, if you do that once, you do it twice, you do it a couple, you know, three times, it becomes a habit of downplaying opponents, and then it could come back to bite you. So I want to see the team's full effort, but this is really a very average FCS team, one that was 6-6 last year and is their first non-losing season in a while. They got slaughtered by Baylor by like 50 points in 2009, the last time they met. So, you know, we're really kind of overlooking them in this podcast, but it's for a good reason. Baylor, whether Seth Johnson starts or if you put in one of your starting defensive tackles at quarterback. I don't care who plays at quarterback Saturday. Baylor should really just route them, and it's as simple as that.
Yeah, they had in their opener they lost it. They lost to Missouri State. They had a 24-7 lead at the half, and they let it get away from them in the fourth quarter. It looks like their quarterback Zach Adkins. You probably know a lot more about this because you talked to him, but it looked like he had a nice game for them, throwing for over 300 yards and a couple of scores. But I mean, that obviously won't happen on Saturday night at McLean, but again, this is a guarantee game. There's two guarantees in it. You're guaranteed to get a big check, and you're guaranteed to get it handed to you that night as well. So, it's one of those things where, it's really a glorified scrimmage. This is usually the type of game that you play in game number one because you treat it as it counts as a win on your schedule. All the stats count, everything else, but you're kind of using the game to kind of get yourself up to speed and kind of work out your kinks and that sort of thing. It just so happens because of McLean, they wanted to have a little bit more ceremony, and that's why SMU was first and Northwestern State was second, and so it all kind of works out that way. But nonetheless, and of course, the good thing about this is that even though the injuries are troublesome, is even though these guys are sitting out, they can probably play for about a half and then have everyone sit because then they got to go to Buffalo on Thursday and play a Friday night game against the University of Buffalo up there.
Yeah. Someone correct me if I'm wrong, but did RG3 tear his ACL against Northwestern State in 2009?
Oh, man.
I was thinking it was Sam Houston State. No, it may have been.
No, it was either that or Buffalo. And you know, when we're doing a podcast, it's not a good time to research it.
Thank you.
You know, it just came to me that I remember, I'm pretty sure it was that game, and you know, I could be wrong because I often am, but for some reason that just came to my mind, and so you know, maybe it's a good thing Petty isn't playing. You don't want to repeat history. That's really the worst thing that can happen Saturday is Baylor has a bad injury. Otherwise, it's going to be a blowout win. So, enough about Northwestern State.
Okay, and the only cautionary note I'll bring in is the patron saint. You know, everybody bring, you know, my generation, everybody brought in, talked about Truman and Dewey and Rocky and the patron saint of surprise victories, Appalachian State. You do still have to show up and play a game.
Yep.
So, okay. When we come back, we've got interviews with Brass Petty and Seth Russell, and so we'll catch you on the flip side.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SikkimSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
Okay, we're back, and first we're going to play a recording from Brass Petty's discussion on Monday. He still thought he was going to play. He talks a little bit about how much he wants to play in this game.
Yeah, I mean, each injury is kind of different, even though it's kind of the same location. I know Nivar's was probably a lot worse than mine with the other things that went on with his injury. But, yeah, I mean, Brody's was kind of the same as mine, and it's just there's not a whole lot you can do for it. You know, it's kind of like, you know, a pinky finger. It's like you can't, you know, you're not going to go get surgery on or anything like that. You just kind of brace it up and fight through it. So the same thing with that, you know, you just kind of go through rehab and it's a day-to-day thing. It's how you feel. And so, yeah, like I said before, I mean, I know my body and I'm going to be, you know, weigh out my pros and cons here. But, you know, at the end of the day, this is an important game for me. And so I'm going to play. So this is all right.
Pierre Newsom, KC, and Bryce, Coach told us that if you're less than 100%, he doesn't expect you to play. Is that the case in your mind as well, or is there a specific percentage points, if you will, in your mind where you think you can play?
I'll be 100%. I'll be fine. No. I'm going to be honest. This game is just as important to me as the last game of the season, and I know that's weird to think about. I know it's not conference. I know it's out of conference, but if I am able to play and it's not affecting our team, it doesn't affect our production on the field, then I want to be in there. I've watched for too long. I've put on the headsets too many times to want to go back there and do it if I can be out there. And I understand where Coach Bryles is coming from. And at the end of the day, he does have the final decision. But, you know, I know my body. I'm going to be smart with it and safe with it. You know, I'm not going to put myself in any kind of harm's way, but if I can play, this is important to me to play.
And here's Seth Russell talking about the possibility of starting this weekend at Northwestern State, and also about the experience he's had so far playing behind Brass.
It's a game one play at a time. You know, like they always say, you know, you never know what's going to happen, you know, each snap, but you always have to be prepared and be ready to go out there and make the best of your opportunity.
How do you approach this week then with you know, some questions about whether Bryce might be ready or not?
I definitely have to, face it as the same as each week. I prepare. You never know what's going to happen. I'm definitely going to watch a little more film than I did last week. Hopefully be able to know what the defense is doing before they even do it.
The fact that you did play, you know, last year in the end of a lot of games, does that give you more comfort level in the fact that, you know, you have seen some things and that kind
definitely.
Of thing?
Definitely. I mean, any kind of experience you can get, it's definitely going to help you in the long run. Just starting off the season, being able to get in, you know, half a game, I mean, that's, what more can you ask for being a backup, I guess to say. So, that's what you want, and that's what anybody can ask for.
How many snaps do you think you've taken in a game? I mean, Coach Bryles was estimating maybe close to 200 snaps that you've taken in a game.
I have no clue. I couldn't tell you that.
But there is a carryover. Even if the game is decided at the point you're in the game, you know, you come in. that experience still kind of builds.
Absolutely, absolutely. Any kind of game time you can get, I mean, practice can only get you so far. And I mean, that's the same with Bryce. You know, Coach was talking about, you know, he hasn't played a real live snap since last year, so that's why he wanted to keep him in there even with his injury, be able to fight through it and to get more experience.
Bryce was joking that the only way they'll keep him out is if they take his helmet and run with it. Are you a little surprised? Actually, you probably aren't surprised that he has that attitude being a competitor. He is just talking about, you know, that kind of instinct.
Absolutely not. He's a fighter. I mean, he's a competitor. He's a competitor. He's going to do whatever he can to get on the field. You know, he's waited his time. You know, he's not going to let just a small injury, well, I guess not really small, but he's going to fight through it, definitely. He's going to do everything he can. You know, I've been praying for him. And I want him to get back on the field because I know that right now he's in his prime, and he's helping the team out a lot with everything that he's doing.
Get caught up with the latest in Baylor recruiting, basketball, and football with Friday's Baylor Blitz, a weekly staple from SikkimSports.com. It gives you all the details from every recruiting side, football moves, and everything from basketball, from recruiting to upcoming events. Sikkim Sports' Baylor Blitz, a Friday staple. It's been here since 2012, and it will continue to be here.
And we are back, and we are getting ready to cover what's going to come up in the Big 12 and around the nation this week. Now, my first question that I want to ask on a national level, South Carolina gets beat by over 30 points at home, and they're still in the top 25. They played one game. Their defense gave up over 50 points. They're still in the top 25. How is this possible?
Well, three letters, S, E, and C. Look, those programs get the benefit of the doubt. You know, South Carolina had a great team last year. People assume they'd be just as good this year, maybe better, and that's why. But I hate to sound like a crybaby or a whiner, but you know, I think there are a lot of programs in other conferences, if they're number nine and they start their season just getting whipped, and anyone who saw the game, it wasn't competitive at all. You know, getting whipped, they're going to fall out of the top 25. This wasn't Michigan, Appalachian State, you know, where a top five team lost to a nobody. You know, A&M has a good team, but still, I agree with you. I was kind of surprised. If I'm a voter, I'm not voting them top 25 based on what I saw. And, you know, they're playing a pretty good East Carolina team, one of those mid-majors of college football, and this might be the week they drop out for good.
Yeah, I don't have a problem with A&M jumping up.
Not at all.
But, okay, Kevin?
I was just going to say, you know, the one thing about South Carolina's not only is the perception, but there's also so much respect for Steve Spurrier and what he's done in his career, so that everyone who has watched South Carolina over the last few years, they're giving South Carolina the benefit of the doubt. And I can tell you this, if Baylor had played, was coming, you know, same thing, if Baylor had opened up, let's just say for the sake of discussion, if Baylor had opened up at Texas and lost a game like that, they would have been out of the top 25, even though they were coming off of the 2013 Big 12 championship. It's a perception thing, and it always will be that way until you have established yourself among the football hierarchy. Baylor is trying to do that. They're not there yet. We all understand that.
South Carolina
reached that with Steve Spurrier over these years. So because of the fact of who they are and what they've done in recent years, and who's coaching them, that's why they stay in the top 25, because all the writers and the coaches have, like, well, okay, yeah, that was a horrible night, but they'll get it together, that sort of thing. Baylor does that, like, see, we told you they're not that great. They caught the Big 12 at the right time last year, and the Texas game just exposed them for where they're at. Again, these are all hypothetical discussions, mm-hmm. but that's kind of the mentality of these guys that are doing the voting, be it on the coaching side or the national media side. And those guys on both sides could flat out deny this stuff all they want, but I'm telling you, it's the truth, and if they want to argue with me, they know how to find me. So.
Okay. And like I said, it's just something that, for me, I've always been a little leery about the rankings. I really would like to see them come up with a system where every team has a legit chance to play in. to the playoffs either by winning their conference or some kind of wild card system. Have to have more than four teams to do that, but I really don't like the beauty contest aspect of guys getting into the playoffs. Okay.
And the only thing is, too, is that those guys, I mean, those, you know, the only rankings that are going to count that are going to mean have any substance to them is the fact that, you know, when the committee poll comes out last weekend of October, that's when you can really start paying attention. What we're looking at right now is pretty much window dressing. It's a conversation piece. It drives the interest in the game, and to me, that's really what it's all about. We've said for years that these preseason polls should be done away with because they don't matter. They don't play a role in any of this to any extent. And really, I think there are more window dressing now more than ever than they have even in the last 10 years.
Yeah, and that's like, and you're right, they're not going away because you start looking at, you know, Sports Illustrated, they do the NFL power rankings now, and those really don't mean anything. Okay? So, there are two games that have national interest this year, or this week. One is Michigan State at Oregon, and those are two top 10 teams. Quick thoughts on what could happen with those two guys. Jake?
Yeah, well, I'm going to look at it with green and gold glasses and say what result most benefits Baylor if Baylor wants to make the Final Four. I think Michigan State has a bit easier schedule than Oregon. I think Oregon has a tough Pac-12 schedule, could lose a game, maybe two down the stretch. Whereas Michigan State, if they win this, you know, they're probably – they might go undefeated, and they're going to grab one of the Final Four spots. So having said that, I think in Baylor's interest, it's probably better if Michigan State loses this. That probably knocks Michigan State out of the Final Four. Not probably, maybe knocks them out of the Final Four. Whereas Oregon, you know, you saw last year, they could slip up multiple times. You know, looking at it without a Baylor perspective, I can't wait for the game. I think it's going to be a really interesting test of Michigan State's defense against a – you know, one of these high-powered offenses, because that happens with Baylor a lot. You see these, you know, the media say, well, these fast-paced offenses have a hard time with big, physical, and fast defenses, and that's something Michigan State has. So I'm curious to see how Oregon, you know, moves the ball against Michigan State. I think Michigan State has a better offense than they've had in the past, so I think this is going to be an excellent game. I think Michigan State is better than Ohio State right now and probably the best team in the Big Ten. So it's going to be a really great indication of you know, what the best of the Big Ten is like against, you know, what possibly the best of the Pac-12 is like.
You know, when looking at this game, I can remember, guys, if you remember, I was on a debate with someone last year debating Oregon, who was better between Oregon and Baylor. And I made the argument that Baylor's fast-paced offense was better because it had the running gap, the running game, and was physical enough to get to use the A gaps if it needed third and two, whereas Oregon had to do everything on the outside. And you know, the reason why Oregon has lost these games to likes of Stanford, LSU. I was at AT&T Stadium a few years ago when LSU played Oregon and pretty much popped the Ducks in the nose or in the bill, and they really. Fast and physical beats fast every single time. And I think what's going to be really important for Michigan State is that Sparty is going to have to make sure that they can keep everything off the perimeter and make sure that the start of the game doesn't go against them so fast, because Oregon can get out so quick on people, especially at Outson, that it's really going to be important. If Michigan State can survive the first roughly 7 to 9 minutes of the first quarter, then I think they've got a pretty good chance to win this game. Connor Cook is a really good quarterback for Michigan State. He didn't lead him to the Rose Bowl championship or the Big Ten championship itself because he was just an average guy. He's a really good player. And I think for Michigan State's and maybe the Big Ten standpoint, that even though Wisconsin lost to LSU in a game that really could have gone either way, but I still think from the Big Ten's perspective that if Michigan State finds a way to win up there on Saturday evening, it really changes the perception nationally as to how people view that conference, because the fact that it's always been accused of not having across the board speed. Those teams in the Big Ten have speed, maybe not across the board speed. My biggest complaint about the Big Ten teams is that they haven't had the speed in the crucial areas like the linebackers so that when things get to the second level, they can make plays. So if Sparty can find a way to win up there, then I think it really changes a lot of things. It's really going to be important for them. Marcus Mariota is going to be back. Obviously, he's going to be a Heisman Trophy candidate. So I think it's going to be a really, really fun game to watch. It's going to be really telling. I think you're right, Jake, because I think if you're Baylor, you probably want Oregon to win that, although Oregon's probably got a better schedule. Now, Michigan State still has Ohio State and Nebraska, and, of course, Michigan on its schedule coming out of there with the Big Ten. But I think with Oregon, though, that I just have a feeling that throughout this year – I don't think you're going to see a team go undefeated this year when we get to the Final Four. I just have a hard time seeing that. So I even feel that way about Florida State. I even feel more confident saying that about Florida State the way they played against Oklahoma State last week.
Yeah. Okay. My take on it, I think Michigan takes it. I think Michigan, when Oregon plays physical teams, like you say, they get beat up. Now, if Oregon can get ahead, Michigan State does not have the type of offense that if Oregon, you know, jumps out, gets like two or three quick scores, Michigan State does not have the type of offense to, you know, come down and make those fast scores without turnovers or something like that. That said, I'm picking Michigan State. Jake, you're going Oregon?
Yeah, I'm going Oregon.
And Kevin, you're going?
I'm going to go. Go ahead, Jake. I'm sorry.
Yeah, no, I'm just saying, not much more than that. I'm going Oregon. Sometimes their offense does slow down. It's not like it gets shut out. I think they're still going to score enough points to win. I still think they're going to have some big plays.
Okay. I'm going to go Michigan State.
Okay. Gosh, I got two Big Ten homers with me.
What can I tell you, man? Okay, the other one that we've got nationally is number 14 USC at number 13 Stanford. I'll go ahead and give mine. I think Stanford cleans their clocks. I think I think that USC right now is still kind of living off that 05, off of how good they were back when Pete Carroll was there. I don't think this is a really good team right now. I think they're a blue blood, they're a name team, but I don't really think they're a great team. So I'm going Stanford. Jake?
I haven't seen enough of either after one game of the season to make too much of a credible call, but I think there is a lot of intrigue just because if you remember last year when Washington played Stanford, the head coach of Washington was Steve Sarkisian, and he accused Stanford's players of faking injury to slow down the Washington offense. Obviously Sarkisian's at USC now, so there's a little bit of bad blood there. And I think he's a great coach. I think he'll infuse that bad blood into USC, and I think it's going to be closer. I don't think their clocks will be totally cleaned like you're predicting. I think it's going to be closer, but yeah, I agree. I think Stanford wins.
Well, also you've got guys jumping off of balconies at Southern Cal. You've got the guy that got mad, tweeted about the coach and left. I think that's a program in kind of it's like still in Lane Kiffin mode.
No, they're out of that, but there is definitely some internal strife, no doubt about that. Kevin.
I think with Southern Cal and Stanford, I mean, I would defer to a David Shaw and the Cardinal just because I think that they've got a little bit more experience now. I think Stanford got a little bit exposed last year against Michigan State, even though that was a pretty even matchup, but I think they got exposed a little bit. One thing about USC is that, they ran what was 105 plays against Fresno State, which was ridiculous. I don't think you've ever seen it. I think that's a USC record for them to run off that many number of plays. But I would still favor Stanford just because the other thing to keep in mind about with SC is the fact that they're still trying to get on the other side of all the scholarship sanctions where they were limited to 15 scholarships for a couple of years. So their depth is still going to be interesting. You make a great point, Stephen, that Steve Sarkisian, who just took over there, did not have the smoothest of fall camps with the safety who lied about why he jumped out of his apartment building, the running back who tweeted, you know, things against him. Those are just distractions that you don't need. Obviously, the Trojans weren't impacted by it in their opener. I'll say this: if USC wins this game, then we're definitely looking at a different type of Trojans team and the team that has been able to put those distractions behind them. So I think that's something that you would, that they would have to do, that they would really, you know, they would have a way to end this. One more game though I want to throw out there, because we're seeing the end of a rivalry between Michigan and Notre Dame Saturday night in South Bend. Because remember, this team, these two rivals, we're going to be playing all the way to 2031. And then when Notre Dame announced that it was going to the ACC, they had to make some changes in their schedule. So they're ending their series with Michigan. I believe this is the last matchup between these two programs for the foreseeable future, which is really disappointing because it was one of the great early season rivalry games in college football. And to see that, a lot of other rivalry games have gone down the drain too because of the shifting of college athletics, which is disappointing. But it should be a very emotional night in South Bend between two programs that have really, really, really enjoyed some great finishes over the years.
I agree, but, you know, we saw the end of the Baylor and Missouri rivalry with the end of the Big 12, so we'll get past this one.
Baylor-Missouri rivalry. Well, I was actually looking at, like, Oklahoma and Nebraska and Texas A&M. I wasn't aware of the Baylor-Missouri rivalry carrying that.
A lot of Missouri series going.
Yeah. Well, let's talk about the Big 12.
Okay, we want to pick that one, or we want to let it ride? I'm picking Notre Dame.
Yeah, I'll pick. Where's the game even being played?
South Bend.
Yeah, give me Notre Dame. I think Michigan is kind of on a. They're trending downward after a great debut from Brady Hoke at Michigan. I think they're having a little trouble there. So yeah, I'll take Notre Dame.
Full disclosure here. When I was a kid growing up, my dad and I would always bet this game between Michigan and Notre Dame. It's a simple $5 bet. This bet goes back to when I was like, I don't know, 10, 11 years old. And you know, my dad's been gone for 5 years. And so a good friend of mine and I, who's also a Notre Dame fan, he picked up the bet. And so my dad would always pick Notre Dame and I would always pick Michigan. So I have to stay true to my allegiance in the way this bet has been structured over the years. So I'm going with the maize and the blue.
All right.
Okay, and you know, the thing is, neither one of these are like top teams this year, but it still should be a pretty competitive game because I think they're equally matched teams.
Yeah, it's great stadium and two of the best uniforms in college football. I mean, just for that. I mean, it's just...
The helmet.
The teams get up for each other. It's a good game, and I agree, Kevin. I joked about Baylor-Missouri. It is a shame to see it go.
it's a good one. I'm kind of laughing at it. And so.
It's a shame to see it go. But, yeah, let's move on to the Big 12. I know we got a full slate this weekend. Kansas finally plays. So, Stephen, let's run down.
I think, let's see, TCU is taking a week off. Other than that, we do have a full slate. The first, I don't think we need to spend a whole lot of time about. This is, you know, Oklahoma at Tulsa. I'm going Oklahoma.
Oklahoma big.
Yeah, I'm going Oklahoma as well. I watched Tulsa. They were lucky to beat Tulane at home. They won't get so lucky this time. Still curious to see how Trevor Knight plays. His Oklahoma thrashed... they thrashed Louisiana Tech last week, but his numbers weren't outstanding. They weren't Sugar Bowl numbers, so something I like monitoring.
Okay, and then we have Kansas State at Iowa State. Should we wait on that one? That's a full Big 12 matchup, but I've got Kansas State heavy.
I do too. I mean, I think Iowa State will get up for this one. You know, of course. You know, Iowa State was impacted by losses of one of the receivers who had torn ACL, even though he didn't catch a pass last week. And, you know, they just got strummed at home by North Dakota State. I think that the Cyclones will put a little bit more urgency into this week, but I can still see Kansas State winning something like 34-17.
Yeah. I like Kansas State too, and you mentioned that receiver, Kevin. That's Quentin Brundage.
Right, thank you.
Imagine if you had Antoine Goodley and a bunch of spares, basically, as your receiving core. That's like losing Goodley and having those spares left over, although they did sign a 5-star or a 4-star receiver in the 2014 class. But, yeah, I mean, that's a huge blow to Iowa State. That was their best skill player easily, and now he's gone for the year. That's sad for Iowa State, and they'll definitely miss him. I think Kansas State wins by maybe 3 touchdowns.
I think the thing to me is that Iowa State, after they had, you know, last year they just really tanked towards the end of the season, and right now, you know, losing to North Dakota State, I think they're in a really fragile mental state right now, and I'm not sure they're not ready to pull out the basketballs right now. Okay, our next one is probably, in my opinion, a blowout. We've got Missouri State at Oklahoma State, and I think Oklahoma State's going to come home and kick the dog because they're mad because they should have won that game at Florida State.
Yeah, I wouldn't say should have won, but sorry, Kevin, to interrupt you. You are, and
no, you're right.
After all, you are my boss, but... I agree, Stephen. I think they do take out their frustration on Missouri State. I don't think they should have won. I think they definitely could have won. That J.W. Walsh fumble when it was a 1-score game killed them. One interesting aspect is that, you know, that Baylor is playing Northwestern State, which only just barely lost to Missouri State last week. So, you know, if you believe in the transitive property. It'll be interesting to see what Oklahoma State does against Missouri State and what Baylor does against Northwestern State. That's about the only intrigue on this one.
I think, though, for me, I mean, yeah, I like Oklahoma State to win big. That's not a question. I take away from it, though, is how impressed I was with how Oklahoma State, you know, got off the deck. They were down 17-0 against the Noles and found a way to make the thing a 1-score game. And, yeah, you'd love to see where that thing was going to go if Walsh doesn't fumble, which was a great play by the Florida State defender to kind of jar that thing come out as he was on his way down. But at the same time, to me, this goes back to what I've said before. I have so much respect for Mike Gundy and what he has done there in Stillwater and putting the program together that despite the fact that they lost, you know, roughly 24 kids off that team last year, the fact that they went into a game where they're heavily underdogs and found a way to make that thing really, really interesting at the end. People can say, well, yeah, Florida State just was not on target. They were not sharp or crisp. Oklahoma State had something to do with that. And I really think the Cowboys are going to have a better year than people think they're going to. That's why I originally picked him third in the preseason poll, because that's what I think of Mike Gundy.
Yeah, and you were right. You know, I kept hearing people say Oklahoma State would be down, but I haven't seen Mike Gundy have that many down teams.
Yeah.
Okay, our next one is Towson at West Virginia. West Virginia showed a lot more than I expected. I don't think Alabama's as good as a lot of people think they are. I mean, they're still a good team. I expected them to really win big over West Virginia, but West Virginia looks like they got a better team this year than I was crediting them with.
I agree. I think West Virginia showed me a lot more than I was expecting, although I will say Alabama showed me a lot less than what I was expecting. Still, I don't want to take anything away from West Virginia. They took the number 2 team in the country down to the wire. You know, so long as they get up for Towson, it should be a pretty much a snoozer as well.
Yeah, I mean, that's a regional team. I mean, Towson's a team I think it's in Baltimore, you know, an FCS squad. You're right, though, Jake. I like the way, you know, the one thing I loved about West Virginia in that game against Alabama was the fact that they took the opening kickoff and drove all the way down and at least got a field goal out of it. I know they had a couple chances to get a touchdown, but they drove that thing right down Alabama's throat and got a score out of that thing. And then the thing that really came to play was when they were down 17-10, they took the ensuing kickoff back the other way for a touchdown to get the thing tied at 17. So it's a team that has, you know, I was pretty impressed with their athleticism. If Clint Trickett is worth his salt, you know, he played Florida State at one point in his career. But if he's really going to get this thing going for them, I kind of like the fact I could see West Virginia finding a way to put itself in position to be a bowl team you know, like a 6-6 type of squad this year because they've had so many defensive issues. But, you know, pretty telling year. If they find a way to do that, then not only is West Virginia kind of on more stable ground than Dana Holgorsen gets to keep his job.
Dana Holgorsen gets to keep his job, and Baylor's traveling to Morgantown all of a sudden looks a lot more exciting.
Mm-hmm. What was it in the 20 questions, Jake, that we were all looking at games that could be trap game? And I just trap looking game. At that one in Morgantown on the 18th, saying that thing is going to be really, really interesting to see what this thing's going to look like.
All right. Our next one is Texas Tech at UTEP. UTEP, you know, last week I said that you want to see, is Texas Tech giving up points? Because if they are, that's not a good sign. UTEP isn't a great school in where they're from, and so I'm saying the same thing. I'm picking Tech, but I want to see if they can stop anybody.
Yeah, I agree. I'm picking Tech, too, because they're the better team. I mean, UTEP was pretty awful last year. But one thing they do have going for them, they have a really solid running game. You know, they rushed for over 300 yards last week against New Mexico. And they have a great young running back named Aaron Jones. He rushed for over 200 yards last week. Tech couldn't really do much defensively last week. So, you know, while I expect Tech to win and probably win comfortably, again, Steven, I'm with you. I want to see what their defense does because, boy, they're going to be lucky to win, you know, match last year's win total if their defense is as bad as it showed last week.
Yeah, and let's face it, too. Davis Webb, you know, threw for a bunch of yards. He also threw two interceptions. And I think the one thing that really kind of bothered me, you could tell that it really bothered Cliff Kingsbury, was the fact that he did not feel like his team was emotionally ready to play the game. He thought they were flat in pregame warmups, and they played like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, they're going to be heavily favored to win this game. It's going to be a late night out in El Paso Saturday night. But I just think that they're in a position where they cannot overlook this game. You know, you've got former AM quarterback Jamil Showers running that thing on offense, and he didn't have a great night, but he does have experience. So it's not like they're going to be walking into a place where a team that, you know, has a little confidence of winning a game on the road in Albuquerque, and the entire city of El Paso is going to be jamming into the Sun Bowl to watch this thing to see if the Miners have a chance to pull this off. I doubt it. But at the same time, the deeper this thing goes, and if UTEP's hanging around, and if Tech is kind of messing around out there. You know, Tech's been out there before and found a way to win pretty comfortably. But again, if they're not emotionally ready to play, you never know.
Yeah, and the thing that I'm coming back to is if UTEP is giving you a game, you're probably not competing for a Big 12 title.
Yeah.
I mean, we don't expect Tech to compete for a Big 12 title. Maybe some of our fans do. That's unrealistic right now. Just because where they are and where, you know, Baylor, Oklahoma, and even Oklahoma State and Texas are right now, I agree with that. They shouldn't be worried about a Big 12 title. They should be worried about improving that defense.
Okay, and now we come up to the one. This is the one that I'm really torn on. I still don't know who I'm picking. Brigham Young at Texas, and Texas lost David Ash probably for the career. They lost their starting center, but they played really good defense. They held North Texas to under 100 yards total offense, which, oddly enough, Baylor held SMU to 67 yards and minus 20 rushing. it's one I don't know. It's being played in Austin, and Texas is really smarting because a lot of Texas fans are really grateful to Brigham Young because they wanted Mack Brown gone. So y'all pick, and then I'll decide.
Kevin, go ahead.
I'm gonna go with Texas here, for the simple fact that I think this, you know, when I watched them against North Texas, and again, it is North Texas, and that's a pretty bad team coming out of Denton. But when I watched them against nor Texas. Kids were running to the ball. Angles were pretty good. They tackled in bunches. Their numbers were good. And those kids don't forget, and there's a good number of kids that are on that roster that remember the 550 yards that the Cougars scorched on them up in Provo that cost Manny Diaz his job as soon as the plane landed in Austin from Provo that night. I realize that the quarterbacking situation at Texas is going to be a little bit up in the air. Tyrone Swoops making his first career start. You've got Gerard Hurd that's probably going to be backing him up, the true freshman out of Denton Geyer. So there's a lot of Charlie Strong said it publicly that he goes, I don't think that we're not going to be worried about that with Tyrone. We're going to be just muscling on. Publicly, that's the best thing to say, is to say to your young starting quarterback, I got your back. And I think as a whole, Texas is going to be saying, like, we owe this. And I think Texas wants to prove to itself that they can be a really good team this year. And this is the game that really – and it's at home because they got UCLA coming up the following week up at AT&T in Arlington. This is the game where they really get to see where they are, how good they can be, if they can really can be a competitive team like they think they are, even though we in the media have kind of thought them to be anywhere from 8-4 to 6-6 or whatever. So Texas finds a way to win this game in Austin, and maybe that changes their self-perception of them, their view of themselves.
Yeah, and this is a big game for them, because if they lose here and then lose to UCLA, they're 1-2. Mm-hmm. And that's what they want to about giving Charlie Strong time, but you're not going to hear fans giving a 1-2 Texas any slack.
No.
Well, I wouldn't write off the UCLA game just yet, because UCLA didn't look like world beaters in their first game.
No, they were. Ooh.
But, you know, I'm going to have to make up my mind while we're talking here. I want to pick – not want to. I'm leaning toward Texas because I do agree with you, Kevin. I think their defense is so much better than it was a year ago. Mm-hmm. And I also think BYU, their quarterback, Taysom Hill, man, he's electric. But he's not a great passer, and I think that helps Texas. I think they've figured out their run defense and are one-dimensional. But I don't see Texas offense moving at a ton. I think this is going to be a really low-scoring game.
Could be.
And one that comes down to the end. I guess I don't know where I am in the standings between the three of us as far as picks. I think I'm a game behind, and since both of y'all will probably pick Texas, for the sake of trying to even up, I'm going to pick BYU. But BYU or Texas, I have no confidence in either pick. I think it's a 50-50 game in my mind.
Yeah, probably
this
right.
This is the kind of game you want to see because you don't know who's going to win. While listening to y'all, I think I'm going with Texas. And I'm going with Texas for one reason, and that is that Brigham Young's not a real physical team. I think this Texas team is physical now, and I think Texas out-muscles them in a low-scoring game. Okay, now we have one more that I don't really have a clue on. Southeast Missouri State at Kansas.
Man, they're selling standing room only tickets for this one in Lawrence, aren't they, Jake? Weren't you turned down for tickets?
I was. I thought about skipping the Baylor game and going there instead because I'm a Charlie White.
If you're not in Lawrence, where are you?
I'm a Charlie. Yeah, exactly. Where else would you be? I don't know the first thing about Southeast Missouri State. I don't even know their mascot.
I did a quick check on them. Last week they beat some school that's called the Spartans. They're the something Baptist Spartans.
Missouri Baptist, yes.
Yeah, and they beat them 77-0.
In their area. Well, I'll say this.
Solid.
They're not going to score 77 on Kansas, but I don't think this is going to be your FBS versus FCS blowout. Just because I don't think Kansas is any good, and as we talked about last week, they lost their top two running backs. I'm pretty sure Kansas will win, but it's not going to be the blowout win you would want when you're playing a team like Southeast Missouri State.
I just, you know, the thing that I would want to know about this game is how good of a passer is Montel Cozart, because he was so abysmal last year. You know, he came in to play against Baylor, last year in October and was really wretched in that game. Again, part of that was not his fault. They were just in such a disarray with the quarterback position. They had to rush him out there. But he's a really good-looking athlete, though, because I did see him, you know, when they pulled off that upset against West Virginia last year, where he's a really good-looking athlete. Charlie Weiss said something on the call this week that he feels like, despite the two injuries to his two running backs, and he feels like he's got a, you know, he's got a JUCO running back, and then of course he's got Dallas Carter's Corey Avery, who's probably going to step in, who's going to see some carries, that he feels like his running back situation could be okay up there. I think it's going to be really interesting. This is a good early way to get Montel Cozart started and see really what kind of ability he has, because next week they're on the road at Duke, and then they're home to Central Michigan, and then they open up the conference season by going to Austin, or excuse me, playing host to Texas on the 27th. So, you know, we can joke around and kind of take these little jabs at KU, and but at the same time, I'm really intrigued to see what Montel Cozart does. If he has, you know, like 15 of 29 passing against an Ohio Valley Conference team, then I'm going to go, this is going to be a really rough year. If he's like 18 of 23 or something like that and 250 yards and three scores or whatever, then it's like great start for him. That's exactly what they wanted. So that's the thing that I'll be looking for in that game, outside of Kansas winning it.
Okay, so you got Kansas, and I'm going to go ahead and go with Kansas just because I think Kansas should have better athletes. I'm not sold on Charlie Weiss's coaching ability. But I don't know much about the team they're playing, but I'm going Homer Big 12 on this one. All right, and our last game, I think we already know what our predictions are. Northwestern State at Baylor. Give me a score, Jake.
I'll say Baylor 10-0. That 10 comes in the first few minutes, and then it ends up being 55-3.
I'll go Baylor 52-3.
I'm going to go Baylor for a repeat. I'm going to go Baylor 45-0.
You know what? Scratch that, Stephen. They're not going to get a field goal if Baylor doesn't want him to. I'm going to go 55-0.
Okay. All right. So that's what we've got, and that wraps us up for this week, and we will see you next week on the Sikkim Sportscast.
The Sikkim Sportscast is an independent opinion and analysis-driven program from the staff and does not represent the views or opinions of either Rivals or Yahoo. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.